You're listening to the UFO Talker Podcast. Come with us as we explore UFOs from the past and the present. With insightful discussions, interviews, and reviews, we will add our voice to the mysteries that have been seen in our skies and oceans for all of human history. Now, here's our host, Michael Ryan.
Welcome, everybody, to the podcast. This is Season 2, Episode 33 from Studio 7H here in Ontario, Canada.
And I'm Christine Scott, coming to you from Studio 9H in the beautiful Warehouse District in Regina, Saskatchewan.
Christine is in the house again.
Woo! Represent!
I know. This is like going to be a standard thing now, maybe.
Yeah!
Christine, we have a few bits of news today, UFO news, but I just want to talk very briefly about what we're going to talk about later. And boy, do we have a good show today.
Oh, wow. It's a lot of juice.
We are going to call it the Parliament Hill Incident. And, you know, hang on to your hats, because I have uncovered these documents again. This is like a treasure trove of RCMP documents. And it's, you know, this will seem hard to believe, because when I was reading it, I thought, what? I have never heard of this before. You know, UFOs around 24 Sussex Drive, which is where the Prime Minister lives, and also Parliament Hill, which is, you know, kind of like Capitol Hill in the States, is where the body of government is. They're all flying around, being seen by lots of RCMP officers in the protective division, which is very similar to the Secret Service. They have a division that guards the Prime Minister and the government and that kind of thing. But yes, you will not believe what you're about to hear. So stay tuned for that. We also have some UFO news that we're going to talk about. But first, I want to bring up the UFO conference that is coming up. And that is in McMinnville, Oregon, where a very famous UFO picture was taken in the 50s. And that is the McMinniman's UFO Fest, which happens on May 17th and 18th this year. And, you know, there's going to be all the traditional things like the parade of people all dressed up in weird stuff. But they're going to have a lot of good speakers. They're going to have Garrett M. Graft, Ryan Graves, Ron James, and Susan and Scott Ramsey, who we are trying to have on the UFO Talker about the Aztec UFO crash. Very controversial. And Christine, you have got some UFO news you want to bring up.
Yeah. So people of Australia got a surprise. The Department of Defense there released 10 pages of UFO documents in response to a Freedom of Information request. 17 defense communications about UFOs and UAPs, they have to put that in, created between July and October 2023. But again here, the key message is defense has no particular interest in the subject. One document clarified defense stopped actively monitoring for UFOs in 1996. And the quote is, there was no scientific or other compelling reason to continue to devote resources to the recording and investigation of unidentified aerial phenomena. Defense does not have a policy on the reporting of unidentified aerial phenomena by either members of the public or defense members. And they go on to say, defense safety of flight incidents, including those potentially posed by UAPs, are handled by the Defense Aviation Authority, with civilian flight incidents under the purview of the Civil Aviation Authority. So stop asking. More or less. That's it. We're done.
Well, it's funny when you hear them say, you know, there's nothing here, move along.
Yeah.
Where have we heard that before?
Nothing to see here. Well, as I was telling you, I got so excited. I said, hey, defense dropped a whole bunch of stuff. But that's still important.
But I think every country has said the same thing.
Exactly.
And, you know, as I feel very strongly about, whenever they say all that stuff, they are doing exactly the opposite.
Yeah, and this is a repeating pattern. Canada, the U.S., Australia, it's like the same thing.
And then you just know that they're not doing nothing. There's groups and people doing all kinds of stuff to investigate what this is, because really it's their job. Like, you know,
move along.
I know it's very comical.
Well, and also in a couple of fun items, the solar eclipse. You had to be living under a rock if you didn't know about the solar eclipse. But in Arlington, Texas, there's an online clip about a UFO sighting during the solar eclipse, which was obviously witnessed by a lot of people. It's a pretty good clip. It's not very long, but it's quite easy to find online. And probably the most fun UFO news item this week was people reporting that the U.S. lunar landers took footage of a UFO, and everybody was, oh, they saw a UFO. But it turned out to be the Korean space vehicle.
Yes. I think we're getting to the point where almost every country on Earth has a vehicle on the moon now. Like, it's being polluted by all the space junk.
Yeah, there's a lot of traffic up there, so it was just a little reminder.
I just want to take a brief moment to recap the eclipse, because I was actually somewhere where I saw the total eclipse.
Oh, good.
And so we went to a place, 30 minutes from my house here in Southern Ontario, just east of Toronto, and it was really strange. I don't know if you've ever been in an eclipse, Christine, but it was an odd feeling. So it was overcast, it was a very overcast day already, so you couldn't actually see the sun. But, at the time, as the time got closer, it got a little bit darker. So at one point I thought, oh, this is pretty cool. Like, it was fairly dark, but not like dark like nighttime. Mm-hmm. And so we were all, on a deck, and we're looking at it, and oh, isn't this thrilling and all that. And then this odd thing happened, and I can tell you this is probably the oddest I have felt in a long time. So we're all going like, this is it. Wow, it's amazing. And then within, I'm going to say, a 60-second period, it went from what we thought was the darkest it was going to get, and 60 seconds later, it went like down, like a ball dropping, to really dark. Mm-hmm. I mean, like dark, like nighttime. And it was very freaky. I thought about it later. So, when the sun goes down, it takes a few hours, it's setting, it's very slow, you're getting adjusted to it. But seldom, or never, I don't think in my life, have I ever seen the sun kind of disappear within 60 seconds. That's a very... It's kind of disconcerting, actually.
Yeah, that's why early peoples were so terrified.
Yes, yes. And then something else I want to mention is, it got very cold. It easily dropped 10 degrees, and it was kind of chilly already. So you couldn't feel those sun rays. And so I don't know enough about this. If we have a scientist in the listening audience, maybe you can tell me why. But I'm pretty sure that besides the heat that you're getting from the sun, those rays, I think there's other rays that come with that we don't often talk about or don't know about. And I definitely felt different. Like, it just felt like your body, there was something different beyond it just being dark. So, yes, it was, you read all this hype about the eclipse, like, oh, it's going to be so cool and blah, blah, blah. But to actually experience, it is different. There's something something strange about it. So I definitely wanted to mention that, because it is unique. It doesn't happen very often. I'm fairly certain from where I live now that it won't happen again for a long time. It'll happen again on Earth, but not anywhere near where I live. And I think where I live, it hasn't happened since 1925. So that will probably be my only eclipse of the sun, unless I end up in a Carly Simon song and I'm able to jet.
Yeah, flew out to Nova Scotia.
To that.
I watched the NASA live feed. Because I was working, I was in the store. One of the booksellers in Regina actually closed up and took photos of it. So I looked at all her photos. But the NASA live feed was spectacular.
Yes.
Yeah. If anybody, just even if you could witness the eclipse live, do yourself a favor and go to YouTube and watch the NASA live feed. It started in Mazatlan, and then continued, you know, through the southern states. It was amazing.
So, Christine, now we're going to give our shout out, our weekly shout out. And this week it's Fargo, North Dakota.
Population as of 2022, 131,444. And because of the Coen Brothers movie, people, you know, it didn't actually have a lot to do with Fargo, North Dakota. It took place in Minnesota, but everybody's brains link North Dakota and Minnesota now inextricably because of that movie.
Yes.
We were just talking about that.
And they have, as always, I watched videos, and it looks like a decent small kind of city, town, whatever you want to call it. It looks pretty good. They have a lot of museums.
Yeah, per capita.
In Fargo.
And they're just slightly larger than Regina population-wise. But, I mean, they've got the Plains Art Museum, the Fargo Air Museum, which looks amazing.
I want to go there.
Yeah, spread over two hangars. Bonanzaville, USA, which is acres of historic buildings, artifacts, and exhibits devoted to local cultural heritage, just like the Plains Art Museum. And, for you baseball fans, the Roger Maris Museum.
I know, Roger Maris. He was a famous New York Yankee, but... yeah, that looks interesting.
That's a lot of museums per capita.
And then Fargo is on the Red River, and I think it's also in the Red River Valley. And here's something I didn't know, and that I would have been stumped if this had been a question on a game show. So the Red River, it actually flows north. You always think that rivers always flow south. There's a dividing line between where they flow north and south, but don't quote me on that. But that's what I think. But the Red River flows north and it ends up into Lake Winnipeg in Manitoba, which is that's a huge lake. You know, you talk about lakes on cottages. This is like more like the ocean. You know, you can't see the other side. That kind of lake. And also, I just want to mention they have a great movie theater in Fargo, and it's called The Fargo. And it has a spectacular marquee. It's an old building. And they're doing something that a lot of towns and cities do now is it's an old movie theater, but they use it as kind of an entertainment place. Mm-hmm. So they have they put plays in there and rock bands and musical bands play there. And then they show movies as well. It's kind of a all-in-one kind of cultural event center. And that's what they do with this place, Fargo. The theater looks really spectacular. But now we're going to mention our bakery and restaurant. Like if we're going to Fargo, this is where we're stopping off.
After the museums and the zoo.
That's right.
The Red River Zoo. I forgot to mention that.
Yes, where the animals are cold probably.
Yes.
In the winter. But there's many, many bakeries in Fargo, but this one caught my attention. It's called Nothing Bundt Cakes.
That would be on The Simpsons, that title. Yes. Or Bob's Burgers.
That's right. But that's all they make. And this bakery is Bundt Cakes, and boy, do they look good. And they make something, it's called a Bundtlet, and that's like your own personal Bundt Cake. You don't have to
share. Any Bundt Cake is a personal Bundt Cake if you're determined enough, trust me.
And they have a lot of flavors. Two struck me. One is lemon, and the other one was strawberries and cream. They look totally amazing. And... you know, there was a point where we're calling out these bakeries. I was doing, this was several episodes ago, and I thought, you know what? I'm going to send them an email that we're doing this, because how odd would it be for the listeners to walk into one of these places and say, your bakery was featured on a podcast this week. And they would say, well, what one was it? And they would say, oh, it's UFO Talker. And then I think they would escort the customer out of the store because obviously he had something wrong with him. But no, it's all true. But the woman never responded to me. So I thought, okay, so I'm not doing that again. But that's where we would go for bakery goods. And then also the restaurant, and there's lots of good restaurants in Fargo, but this one really, I thought, oh, this is where we're going. It's called the Vinyl Taco.
What a great title.
It is, and it's at 520 First Avenue North in Fargo. And it just has a cool interior, and they play all kinds of music, but only on vinyl. And they have some wonderful sound system. And they said, and we have just great Mexican food. And they said, that's all we have to say. Sometimes a big write-up about the food, but it just said, great Mexican food, that's all we're going to say. And I just thought, okay, this is cool. This is a cool place. I got to be seen here.
Yes. And there's a brewery down the street from me called Rebellion Brewing, because I'm in like the brewing district, that you could, my neighbor, my groovy next door neighbor, you could take your own records there and play them on their record nights while you drank beer and ate their Mexican food.
I wonder
he loved it.
I wonder if the Vinyl Taco would do that. That would be a good idea.
Yeah.
And we will be right back after this message.
In 1983, British ufologist Jenny Randles came up with the term the Oz effect. The term describes a state or a condition that many UFO witnesses find themselves in. One moment, they will be hearing birds and dogs and the sound of the breeze through the trees, and the next minute, all sound seems to fade away. It's not only sound, but all the buildings, streets, and the sky just don't seem the same. It's as if something is out of place, or the reality around you seems to have come to a halt. People who have witnessed a UFO comment later that they had a camera on a nearby table, but during the encounter never thought to take a picture. People who have encountered aliens and moments later go about their day as if nothing has happened. What is the Oz effect? Another dimension? A place where our understanding of the reality around us seems to disappear? Or is it a moment that we are not meant to remember? Next time the sounds around you fade away and something just doesn't feel right, keep your eyes wide open and hang on tight to the world around you.
So, Christine, as promised, we have a real barn burner for this segment. I'm searching through these RCMP documents, and there are thousands and thousands and thousands of them. And, you know, because they're not cataloged, so I have no idea what I'm going to find when I look through these. And so I just came across this, and I just stopped. It was one of those mic drop moments. And I tried to look it up on the internet. And I thought, I don't think this is known, or it's not known on the internet. And what happened, so this took place in March 4th of 1969. And UFOs were seen at the Parliament buildings and at the Prime Minister's residence. And so just to give our listeners an idea of where all this is. So Ottawa is a city, it's the nation's capital in Ontario, Canada, and the Parliament buildings and all the government buildings and the Prime Minister's residence, they're right on kind of the back onto the Ottawa River on kind of a little peninsula, if you can picture that, because the river kind of makes a U where this is. I used to know what that was. I'm going to say it's an oxbow, I think they call it.
In
geography. But it kind of, if you look down on it, it looks like it's a peninsula surrounded by the river. And across the river is the other province of Quebec. So that is where these were seen. And this was at night. Now, Christine is going to take it from there because there was reports made up by several different RCMP constables. So notice I said constable and not officer. Mm-hmm. And also, we should make a special note of this, is that all of these RCMP officers are part of the protective division. And that division is a special unit in the RCMP. And it's kind of, I would say, it would be equivalent to the U.S. Secret Service, because they are tasked with guarding the prime minister's residence, the government buildings, foreign dignitaries, all that kind of stuff. So, Christine, if you could take it away from this point.
All right. Report UFO over Sussex Drive. And this is from March 4th, 1969, reported by Constable R.J. Shanahan. 10 p.m. over the Prime Minister's residence on Sussex Drive. Two objects with glowing color. No specific shape, extremely high altitude. Appeared together over PM's residence. One proceeded west towards Parliament Hill. The second proceeded east towards Montreal. I'm editing slightly here. Light similar to aircraft, but no noises heard. This part's a little hard to read. The word might be observed, number one, between 5 to 6 minutes. Number two, approximately 1 minute. Report from the protective detachment will on foot patrol from the police lodge at Government House to the PM's residence. Clear sky, two rather bright flashing red lights, no shape or trail distinguished. Information passed on to the police lodge via radio, and Corporal Marr reported same to the A Division desk, NCO Sergeant Smith. A closer watch was maintained for the next hour while at the Prime Minister's residence, but no further sighting was made.
And then, I just want to comment on that is, you mentioned this, but it really captured my attention because it said, you know, object two, it says rather bright flashing red lights in the sky. Mm-hmm. And so something you have to think about, or what our listeners should really remember, is so these constables in the protective division, so it's their job to monitor and have surveillance on anything that's coming into the PM's, you know, residence or parliament buildings, what's flying above. So it's kind of their job to be aware of all these things, what's in the air. So it's not like they haven't seen aircraft in the air before. So they would be very, very familiar with airplanes and helicopters and what they look at night and what they sound like. Yeah. So for him to make a note of this, so it's not like it was a constellation, you know, like, oh, what's that up there near Mars? Like, you know, they're not wasting their time like that. So to make note of this, it has to be very unusual. Mm-hmm. And especially where it's a bright flashing light. And he saw two of them.
Yeah.
Now, Christine's going to read another report, and it's by a different constable, and we'll talk about it later. So this adds a lot of new. It's one of those things where we wish we could go back in time and ask about a dozen more questions.
This is the statement by Artie Lloyd. At approximately 10 p.m., I observed an object at low altitude appear over the Ottawa River behind the Parliament buildings. Upon appearance, the object fell straight down and seemed to burn itself out in a short distance. The object was sighted by myself, Lloyd, while the sky was clear and the visibility was excellent. The object shone like a star, was small, and had no discernible shape. In falling, it seemed to burn itself out. Just before it disappeared, there appeared to be an orange-brown tail. The above information was passed on to the NCO, A Division Staff Sergeant Smith. And then, what we see in a lot of these UFO reports, unless otherwise instructed, this file will be closed at this point.
I know. You know, whenever I read that, I think, are you kidding me? Like, so yeah, this is the Prime Minister's residence in the parliamentary buildings. Yeah, we don't need to look into that.
No, it's the head of state lives here, and we're good.
We don't need to be on top of that.
Yeah.
So, Christine, what we've just or what you've just read is kind of it's mysterious because if I had only found the second document that you read, you could almost think that that was a meteorite.
Yeah.
Kind of the way he describes it, because he actually uses the words, it seemed to burn itself out.
Mm-hmm.
But really, when you read the other documents, no one is talking like that, that it burned itself out. It would say the light disappeared or, and then it came back, that kind of thing. So it's kind of the way he phrased it. You would think it was a meteorite. Now, I'm not definitely not an expert in this, but I didn't think that meteorites fell straight down vertically, because that's what he is saying. I thought meteorites kind of went on a slow trajectory downwards, like it wasn't.
Yeah, kind of an arc because they're falling from space.
Yeah, so that is weird. So that document alone, I think I would have even gone past this if that was the only document, because it's interesting, but yeah, that could have been a meteorite. And so he is behind the Parliament buildings. The other guy, R.J. Shanahan, he is more at the Prime Minister's residence. And so just so our listeners can kind of visualize this in our mind, that from Parliament Hill, which is where the House of Commons is, to 24 Sussex Drive. So that's about 2.8 kilometers or 1.8 miles. It'd be about a 33-minute walk. So not, you know, super close to each other, but you would think close enough that R.J. Shanahan and R.D. Lloyd would have seen the same things.
Mm-hmm.
But when you look at R.J. Shanahan's description of what happened, he saw two lights, and they were flashing red, whereas R.D. Lloyd, who is, you know, 2.8 kilometers away, he doesn't mention anything about a red flashing light or two of them or anything, and it was at the same time.
Yeah.
Very, very odd. So there's a discrepancy there that doesn't seem to make any sense, but it gets better as all of these things do. So, you know, if that wasn't enough fun and frivolity that those two guys, constables, had seen this, and this is going to actually muddy the waters even more. There's a third document. And this document was typed up, and all these are typewritten, so it took time to do all of this. You have to keep that in mind. And also, because this was March 4th, 1969, for anybody who wants to know that, Pierre Trudeau would have been the prime minister at the time, and he was the father of our current prime minister. So the constable who wrote this next report up, his name was R.V. McCrossan. So here is where the plot thickens. And we did these kind of out of order just to show you how confusing this is. So the last two reports, both of those constables cited that at 10 o'clock. So now it's the same day, but this report, they saw the object at 7:45 p.m. So go figure this. Like, don't they talk to each other? So in this report, RCMP Constable R.V. McCrossan, he says, at 7:45 p.m., an object was seen from Parliament Hill going through the sky at a terrific rate of speed, heading from south to north. This object then stopped and appeared in the sky over Hull, Quebec, which is across the river. So, okay, now we have a problem, because McCrossan is saying he's noticed it. It's going at a terrific speed. So I would take that to mean very fast. And then the object just stopped. Okay, so that rules out any kind of airplane. And yeah, helicopters in 1969, I don't know if you would have said that they could have gone at a terrific speed. And also they would have made a lot of noise. So there was no noise with any of these objects. But listeners, it gets even better. So when I read this, another mic drop moment. So this object was also seen by the commissioner of the RCMP, who is like, you know, J. Edgar Hoover, the director.
Yeah.
Commissioner MFA Lindsay and Deputy Commissioner WH Kelly, they were both in the same car and they were driving to Parliament Hill. Also, this object was seen by RCMP Constable DB Best, RD Lloyd, RV McCrossen, and Constable WS Majori.
Whose name will turn
yes,
up later.
And this is going to get listeners, this is going to get even better. This object was seen from Parliament Hill near the Privy Council door. After the object appeared to stop, it gradually moved in a northwest direction and at 9:34 disappeared from view. So, you know, you don't have to be too good in math to figure out, okay, this was visible for quite a while. Like,
yep.
You know, it's not like 30 minutes. The sky at the time was clear and visibility was excellent. This object appeared to have the same shape and color as a star or a planet, but much, much brighter and larger. It appeared to be round in shape and much smaller than the moon in size. This object was observed from 7:45 until it went out of sight at 9:34. No estimate could be made of the altitude. However, it appeared to be quite high in the sky. So luckily they did this. So they contacted Captain H.R. Wolfe at the Royal Canadian Air Force in Uplands Base, Ottawa. And from his base of operations was notified of the object and given the above noted information. Captain Wolfe was notified a short time later and be advised that he would not be taking any action concerning this object. Oh, dear Lord. So this is, I always, because this isn't the first time I've read things like this. So they're contacting this Captain Wolfe, who I looked up on the internet. He had a very good career. He did a lot of good things in World War II. So I guess they're contacting him because, you know, it's his job to be the liaison or whatever to help protect the prime minister. But he said to them he wouldn't be taking any further action.
Yeah. As it always says, unless otherwise instructed, the file will be closed at this point.
I thought when I read that, with all due respect to Captain Wolfe, it's not like this happened every day.
No.
It's not like...
Or maybe it did. We don't know.
It's another one of those shooting star things. We don't need to look into this.
Yeah.
And especially since the commissioner and deputy commissioner of the RCMP also saw it. So I'm sure they're not making stuff up or imagining or... You think you would, boy, I would have sent a plane up. I would have thought, you know, this is the prime minister in our government buildings. Just as a precaution, I'm going to if there was ever a time where I was going to send a plane up, I think this is the time, you know. That would have been my call, but very odd, you know.
Well, just out of curiosity now, I wonder if we should look into if UFOs have ever been seen over Buckingham Palace.
I know. Definitely,
and how those were handled.
Well, as probably many of our listeners know that in the 50s, UFOs were seen over the White House or the Capitol building. I can't remember which one now, but in the U.S., that was a huge event.
And it got a lot of attention. And we were just talking about the fact that nobody really talks about this over our head of state.
I know. And the thing was that the one that happened in the U.S., that was front page news on every major newspaper in the United States. People have written articles. I think there's been books written on it.
Yep.
It was a major, major thing. And this, I'm going to say, is just as good as that. And it's like no one was really concerned. Like it's, you know, just move along. Just make another report.
Yeah.
Everything will be fine.
Yeah. Unless otherwise instructed, the file will be closed at this point.
So what we've just read, it was 8 RCMP officers in total that saw this. So that is a lot of... That's a lot of witnesses.
Yeah.
I just want to mention briefly, because I look into this stuff when I read their names. So the commissioner of the RCMP that saw this, MFA Lindsay, I looked him up. So he has quite a handle, or had quite a handle. He's no longer with us, but his full name was Malcolm Francis Aylesworth Lindsay. Wow, there's a regal title. And he was an RCMP officer from 1934 to 1969 when he retired. And actually, I read his bio. Mr. Lindsay was very forward-thinking. He brought the RCMP really into the future. I won't go into everything he did, but a lot of forward-thinking stuff. He actually instituted police training for indigenous people in the north of Canada so they could perform police duties that had never been done before, and many other things. He also was, not all of his training, but he was trained at the National Defense College in Kingston, and I thought that was kind of interesting.
Mm-hmm.
So here's something I also looked up, but I couldn't find what year this was instituted, but as probably you can imagine, flying over the Canada's national capital, Parliament Hill, and, you know, 24 Sussex Drive, which is the Prime Minister's residence, those are restricted airspaces. But even to this day, it's really not a lot of area. It is 0.4th of a mile radius and only up to 3,000 feet.
That's not a lot when you think of what are the terms for restriction in U.S. airspace over the White House?
Well, I looked it up. It's around 24 miles and also 18,000 feet. So it's quite a restrict, you know, that's a lot of area. So I thought, boy, that is not really covered by much, like 0.4th of a mile. That's not really a secure perimeter. I also want to give our listeners an idea of where the Ottawa Airport is from all the buildings that we just mentioned. So the Ottawa Airport, it is approximately 13.7 kilometers from Parliament Hill, which is 8.5 miles. And I can't imagine that the takeoff or landing path would go over the Prime Ministers or the government buildings. I don't think they would do it that way. But also, and you know, as I do my research, I come across a lot of things. I don't mention them all during the stories that we talk about. But Christine, I have to mention this. Listeners will definitely appreciate this. Also, those listeners who used to be in the U.S. Air Force, I think they will appreciate this. So the Ottawa International Airport, which is now called the McDonald Cartier International Airport, it opened in December 1959, and it was a state-of-the-art building, very modern-looking, lots of glass, huge glass panels, aluminum framing, like it was, you know, just it looked really brand new. And so on opening day, they had the dignitaries there, they had the Piper bands, all those kind of things. And they had planned to have a U.S. Air Force F-104 Starfighter to do a flyby, flyby over the runway in front of all the spectators. Because I believe at the time that was a fairly new jet, and I don't think the Canadian Air Force had it, but they just wanted something really spectacular to do this flyover. So you got to be sitting down for this, because the F-104 Starfighter went low. Now, I couldn't find anywhere how low it would be, but when they say low, I guess it was pretty low. And it went supersonic. And of course, as a lot of us know, when a jet goes supersonic, that creates a sonic boom. Now, normally, I have heard a few sonic booms in my life. Normally, the planes that do this are pretty high, like so high you can barely see them. This plane is, I'm going to say, probably lower than 2,000 feet anyways. And to the shock and amazement of everyone there, the sonic boom created $500,000 worth of damage at the new airport. It shattered almost every window in the building. It broke ceiling tiles, door frames, window frames, and even some structural beams.
I couldn't believe that when you told me. That is amazing. The glass, I figured. But.
In the building. And I thought, boy, who knew sonic booms were that powerful? And it caused, the next day in the paper, the Minister of Transport in Canada, his name at the time was George Hees, and this is a quote, it should be etched into the building. He said, "This was the most expensive 5 seconds in Canadian civil aviation history."
Mic drop.
Mic drop.
Yes.
And I think to myself, I don't know of another case like this. This may be the biggest case ever. And I really wanted to find the name of the pilot because, you know, I'm sure he would have been kidded about it for the rest of his career.
They would have called him Boomer or something, or Breaker or something. He'd have a nickname to his grave.
And consider that, okay, this was 1959. $500,000, that was a lot of money. That was that was not chump change back then. But so if any of our listeners, I tried to find it, but I couldn't. If any of our listeners can find the name of that pilot, oh, I would love to hear it. But just to, you know, make note that it was not his fault. I think this was all planned, even the sonic boom part.
He was told to do it.
Yeah, so it was not like he went rogue or anything like that. He was told by his higher-ups that, yes, make that thing boom. And of course it did. To our listeners, already what we've covered is, you know, boy, this is big-time UFO news event. But, believe it or not, there's even more. Like, you know, how much better can this get? So, as we say, the plot thickens. So those documents, they were from March 4th. And as I perused those documents, the way they are in the files is everything is kind of together. You don't really find stragglers or anything like that. So about 50 or 60 documents later than those documents, so far enough away that I would have stopped looking had I was not looking for something else at the time. But I found another document. Now, this document was from June 5th, 1969, so that's almost about 3 months later, and lo and behold, they saw this thing again. Like, what would be the odds that this would happen again? And also, the W.S. Majori, the RCMP constable, who was there for the first event in March, he's here for the second event in June. Mm-hmm. So this took place June 5th, 1969. And this report was written up by RCMP Constable L.J. Fender. So he says, at approximately 10:15 p.m., so about the same time, while on patrol on the lower drive of Parliament Hill, I observed an object which appeared as a bright falling star descending vertically from an altitude of approximately 2,000 feet to approximately 1,000 feet north-northeast on the north side of the Ottawa River over Hull, Quebec. It hovered in this position for about 30 seconds, so that rules out meteor. No, meteors don't hover. And plus, as it was hovering, it was changing colors to red, green, and white. It then proceeded east and appeared to be circling, dropping, and rising for about 4 to 5 minutes above Eastern Hull in Point Gatineau. It then hovered for another 5 minutes, blinking its lights constantly. At approximately 10:30, it proceeded west of Hull at an altitude of approximately 1,000 feet and came across the river in Ottawa area and disappeared from view behind high buildings at Wellington Street at approximately 10:35. All this while the object was of no discernible shape. At approximately 10:50, a bright object appeared in the sky due south of Ottawa. It kept its bearings at approximately 1,500 feet altitude with a smaller bright object approximately 500 feet below it. The objects disappeared and reappeared at different intervals, but disappeared completely at about 11:10 p.m. However, it could not be ascertained if it was the same previous mentioned object. So far, that's an incredible report. So this is even better than the ones that happened in March, because he's saying that this, it's 2,000 feet, and at one point it dropped to 1,000 feet. Okay, that is not very far. That altitude is not very high. A lot of, if it was an airplane, it'd be very discernible. Mm-hmm. And at one point he says one of the smaller objects was approximately 500 feet below it. So now you're talking 500 feet below that, and now we're talking 1,000 feet, or it could be even a little bit lower. Like, that's low. Mm-hmm. So, you know, this is all great, but yet it gets even better. Like, these documents are the documents that keep on giving. So he said, this is Constable L.J. Fender. He says, at 10:19 p.m., all the lights on Parliament Hill, east, west, and center block went out. Okay. So keep in mind, this guy is in the protective division. Mm-hmm. So not that I don't think it would matter much, but he's got to be on high alert for anything that can harm the buildings, the diplomats, the people, the prime minister of the country. So he's seeing all this high strangeness, and then all the lights go out.
Yeah.
Oh, dear Lord. I mean, this is, you know. Now, so they called up Mr. L. Tisser of the Ontario Hydro, and he said he could not ascertain, this is their favorite word, ascertain, could not ascertain at the time of what it could be, but there was a sewer explosion at Sparks and O'Connor Streets, but that was still being investigated. Now, this object was also cited by Constable, you know, Constable L.J. Fender, W.A. Morrissey, and Constable W.S. Majori. Those three constables, also three civilians. Now, I'm only going to read their first names, and there's a reason for that, but I'm only going to read their first names. So one of them was Alvin, Brian, and Stuart also saw this, and so there was, you know, a lot of witnesses there, I think five altogether, that saw this. Now, this is incredible. And what he doesn't mention, again, we would love to go back in time. I'd have 100 more questions. While he was watching all of this, and keep in mind, this is 2,000 to 1,000 feet. That's low. Isn't he calling anybody? Like, isn't he getting on the radio?
Yeah.
The phone or something, and saying, yeah, can we have, can I call the RCAF, and can we get some planes in the air to find out what's happening?
And all it says is information passed on to the NCO A Division desk, who advised the RCAF home station at the Upland. That's it.
I refuse to believe that this is all there ever was.
Yeah.
Now, this is something I'm going to tell my listeners I'm going to do. So when we, several weeks ago when we did the Bear Point incident, and we read out the people's names that were involved. So I was, people reached out to me, and I was able to make contact with one of the people who their father was in the report, who mentioned everything that happened at Bear Point. And he had told his son everything over many years, what happened. So I'm working on it now. I'm trying to get the son of the person who witnessed the Bear Point incident to have him on. That is going to be spectacular. And also, what I'm going to tell our listeners is the three people, I've only read out their first names. All three of these people, I'm going to say, are potentially well still alive, because they were younger at the time. So I'm going to try and contact one or all of these people and have them on, because, you know, it's possible that some of the RCMP officers are still alive, but usually I think you're probably more senior if you get to be in that protective detail. So either, I'm going to say a lot of them probably would no longer be with us, but it is possible that they're still with us. But certainly these three civilians, I am going to be trying hard to get in touch with one or all of them and to have them on, because that will be spectacular. But Christine, what do you make of this, what we're calling the Parliament Hill incident?
Well, you know what? This isn't the first time that Parliament has had crazy things over it. There was an incident called the Phantom Air Raid on February 14th, 1915. That date is very important, 1915. Our Prime Minister, Sir Robert Borden, received a call from Mayor Donaldson of Brockville informing him that, quote, at least three German airplanes crossed St. Lawrence River from Morristown, New York, over the community traveling in a northerly direction, presumably towards the capital. One of the planes shone a powerful searchlight on the town, lighting up its main street. Reportedly, the planes dropped fireballs or light balls onto the river on the Canadian side of the border. At 11:15, Colonel Percy Sherwood, Commissioner of Dominion Police, ordered Parliament Hill to be blacked out. Now, what's wrong with this picture? Because it's 1915, yes. Aircraft are not crossing the water. Aircraft were mostly, you know, French planes used for reconnaissance in Europe.
Well, definitely there's no German planes flying across the Atlantic.
No. And so these mystery aircraft, because of the date in World War I, they were on high alert for these German planes. But I don't think they were German planes.
No, I'm going to hazard a guess.
Yeah.
That those were, and probably, you know, a light powerful enough from an airplane back then to light up, you know, a big area on the ground. I don't think that was in the cards either. But
no. So we've had some mysterious activity over Parliament Hill for a while, but not widely reported.
The thing that absolutely struck me is this should have made major news. We've already mentioned the similar thing that happened in the U.S. in the 50s. That was huge news.
Yeah.
Huge news. It was on the front page of most American newspapers, TV, all of that. I could not find one thing about this on the internet, any books that I have or anything. I'm going to say that these documents that I'm reading, this might be the first time that anyone knows about this other than the people that were involved, and how lax they were, that like no follow-up, like not even sending up a military aircraft to find out what's going on, especially on the June 5th. I mean, to me, definitely you should have done it on the March 4th case. I believe that qualified, but the June 5th, 1969, 100%. If something's 2,000 feet and 1,000 feet and it's, you know, blinking with all these colors, 100%, and the lights go out. Like, this is all very suspicious. Like, you know.
Over the head of state.
I know. This is the prime minister of the country.
Yeah.
And I guess we don't need to talk about this anymore. They just filed it. And I thought, what? You know, it's kind of their job. It's not like they had something else to do. Like, this is really their job. So I am truly flabbergasted. And something I'm going to try and do shortly, put these documents on my blog so that everyone can read them. And, you know, these documents, a lot of them have reference numbers, that kind of thing on it. Mm-hmm. And they have the signatures of the constables involved, plus their typewritten in their badge number and also their full name. Now, a lot of listeners will think, well, that should be easy for you to do, but I would just like to tell everyone because, you know, there's a lot of work going on behind the scenes, and as simple as it may sound, you know, if I do that, then I'm not doing about 100 other things to prepare for other shows that are coming up, but I'm going to make my best effort to start putting these documents on the blog. And so it might even be that I don't do any write-ups on them. I'll just put them there with the title, like the Parliament Hill incident, that kind of thing, so everyone can see these, especially this one, because I think this one everyone should see. This is pretty significant in the world of ufology that...
national security, too.
Yeah, a country's parliament buildings and the head of the country, his house is being invaded by UFOs. How this didn't make big news back then, I guess it was, maybe it was secret. They didn't want it to get out. They didn't tell anybody. It's possible, right?
Mm-hmm.
So, Christine, just to kind of sum up everything we've talked about in these two reports. So on March 4th, that was seen by a total of 8 people altogether, witnessed by 8 people. And then the June 5th incident, that was witnessed by 6 people altogether. 3 of them were civilians. But, you know, don't forget, on the first event, 2 of the witnesses was the commissioner and deputy commissioner of the RCMP. Mm-hmm. Like, you know. Mm-hmm.
As you say, that would have been like J. Edgar Hoover and Clyde Tolson?
I know.
The two main guys seeing it?
Yes. And I'm sure these people had looked up into the sky before that night. If this looked like, wow, doesn't that star look funny? And then they would have moved on. Like, it so captured their attention that it was part of the report and they talked about it. And also, to me, there's a lot of stuff in between the lines on these typewritten reports. I absolutely refuse to believe that they typed this up and that was the end. Mm-hmm. Like, and it's not just this report, but so many reports in the U.S., all over the world, where it seems like they just kind of nonchalantly say, yes, we saw the cigar-shaped object that was 300 feet long, but, you know, it's gone and that's about it. Like, you know, how does it happen that all this stuff just seems to be forgotten very quickly?
Well, the other thing I was thinking of, because I had to do some research into personal protection detail for my novel I'm writing, they've got a pretty narrow focus. You know, you protect the body, you protect the residents, you protect, and it's observe and report. And they do have a fairly narrow focus. But at the same time, what?
I know, yes. I would like to see the real report or the real meeting, especially on this June 5th.
With the power outage. Yeah.
Yes, because, okay, that's national security now. Like, there was weird lights in the sky at 2,000 to 1,000 feet. There were 2 of them. We don't know what they were. And the power went out. Okay,
And?
I think there's going to be a few meetings, so get some coffees. Like, you know, I can't believe that just, and that's the end of that report, filed.
Yeah.
Or as Christine likes to say, seen.
Yes.
Well, I will try to look into this further. Definitely I'm going to try and contact the 3 civilians who I'm going to say, well, probably absolutely all 3 of them will still be alive. And that would be incredible to have them on because, you know, they could maybe fill in some of the gaps that these reports have left out. But also, and I know that there are police officers who listen to this show, and if there's any RCMP officers who are aware of this, boy, if you could contact us and fill in some stuff on this, because this is big and it really is our nation's capital. So we deserve to know everything about it, right?
Yep.
So, Christine, there is another one from the files of the RCMP, and who knows how many more nuggets are in there. Just incredible, but...
We could subtitle these segments the R files.
Yes, I know. And as Christine is forever telling me, going to keep all of our listeners, we're going to keep you guys posted.
Mm-hmm.
Here are the Canadian Civil Aviation Anomalies for the week of April 8th through April 12th, 2024. On April 8th, a United Airlines Boeing 767-400 flying from Newark, New Jersey, to Madrid, Barajas, Spain, encountered severe turbulence at FL-350 and climbed to FL-270 to smoother air. Reported on April 9th, a UFO was seen at 14:45 Zulu time in the Atlantic region near Gander, Newfoundland. The Gander Area Control Center was advised of an unknown object in their airspace. Also on April 9th, the La Ronge, Saskatchewan Flight Service Station was advised that a remotely piloted aircraft system was approximately 3 nautical miles south of the airport at 100 feet above ground level. Also on April 9th, a Cirrus SR-22 flying from Collingwood, Ontario to Oshawa, Ontario, reported a remotely piloted aircraft system at 4,000 feet in the vicinity of Cookstown, Ontario. Regional police were notified. There was no impact on operations, and all flights proceeded to their destinations without further incident.
Well, that's our podcast for this week. Please share, follow, and subscribe and do all those good things to help spread the word about UFO Talker. And until next time, this is Michael Ryan. Keep watching the skies.
You have been listening to the UFO Talker. If you have any questions or comments on this episode, you can email us at ufotalker@bell.net or visit our website at ufotalker.ca. You can support UFO Talker by using the Buy Me a Coffee app with links on our website and in the show notes. We appreciate every listener. Thank you for your support. This has been a Michael Ryan production.
30, that's a wrap.